Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle on cliffcentral.com.
How you guys doing? Hope you are feeling fantastic because today is another session of Black Life. I'm so excited today because in the studio with me, I have a young man by the name of Buzwe Mabuza, and he is a interior decorator and a designer extraordinaire. But we're not going to be only talking about interior deco and design and that sort of thing. We're going to be talking about business, we're going to be talking about life, and we're going to be talking about nice life problems. If you have any of those nice life problems, for example, you know, you have a little bit of spare cash lying around and you want to redo the house, you want to redo the bathroom, maybe the bedrooms. I know that I want to redo the curtains, definitely, in my house. But apart from that, it's not just about redoing the curtains and putting up a couple of paintings. So, without any further ado, let me introduce to you Mr. Buzwe Mabuza. How are you doing, my brother?
Very good. How are you doing, Doc?
I'm good, man. It's good to be here with you in the studio on a Thursday morning here on Cliff Central, on Black Life, of course. That's the name of the show. Give us a brief background. I've known you for a couple of years, and I know that you're a guy with amazing style. You should see him right now. This guy is always dressed to the nines. Even when he's wearing something simple, you know, it's like he just takes it to another level. Is this a lifestyle thing for you? It's just how you are every day, all day.
Yeah, man. Look, I'm one of those guys who, you know, everybody in the hood, there was something they were known for. Mm-hmm. Some guys were known for playing soccer. Some guys were known for having the ladies. I was just that guy that was just known for just being dressed up for the sake of being dressed up.
Yeah, everything.
You know? I mean, guys would be like, dude, you like dressed up even when you're dressed down, bruh.
So even when you're wearing a short, your shorts and sandals is something interesting, ne?
Has to be, my man. Look, I've always believed in just being yourself through and through in everything that you do and having your identity permeate through everything of your life, you know. So
that's something of a branding thing, though. You know, people when we talk about brands, a brand is basically what you're known for.
No, for sure.
If you look at BMW, for example, to make an example of that, once again, it's a sporty sedan type of car. If you look at McDonald's, it's fast food served fast and hot. If you look at someone like Michael Jackson, his brand would be every time you see Michael Jackson perform, either at a show or in a music video or anywhere, he is Michael Jackson. He's excellence. He's gonna dance, he's gonna sing, he's gonna bring it. Your brand is, you're just known for knowing and living and being the finer things in life.
So simply put, a brand is a promise given and a promise kept.
Okay.
Meaning that if somebody says, do you know Dumisho? First question they're gonna ask is, or what's his claim to fame? Why should I know him? And basically, that's that promise that you've given to say, when you engage Dumisho, this is what you're going to engage. Yeah. If you engage a BMW, this is what you're going to experience. If you engage a McDonald's, this is what you're going to experience. So it's that promise. Do you know what I'm saying? So in a sense, you can end up with a brand by default. And that brand by default can be, do you know so-and-so? Oh, you mean the loose one from the other street?
Yeah. That guy, Tanda Bafaz.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you're definitely right in that sense, you know, that it deciding who you are and being that always.
Okay. Now, like, you're from Nagasi, you know, and I know there are a lot of stylish guys from Kokasi. I grew up in Pretoria. I say Pretoria because people are like, but which Kasi specifically? Mamelodi, Soshanguve, Harankua. I'm from all the Kasis. And there were guys, you know, Kokasi, who, like, looked good. And it's not about spending a lot of money to look good, but we used to say, you know, you can see that guy, when he gets out the house, he's made sure that, because there are people who've taken a shower and it doesn't look like they've taken a shower. You know, people who are well groomed all the time, they make sure that they comb their hair, they make sure that they're wearing a clean and ironed shirt, their shoes are polished, that sort of thing. Were you always that kind of guy, and why?
Definitely, I was that kind of guy, man. I think to a degree, it's you know, growing up, I was like a little midget. Okay. For some reason, I just got a growth spurt like straight after high school.
Okay.
But I was like the shortest guy in school, you know. I never played soccer. I was never a popular person in any way. So the one thing that I could control in terms of at least to represent was just my packaging.
Okay.
You know, and also I had a mother who was like, no child of mine is leaving this house looking otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, every single morning going to school, my shoes got polished. It was part of the routine.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's part of the growing up. It's part of the structure that you basically were brought up from, if I can say so. Yeah.
Okay. So it starts there, right? But going into design, going into interior decorating, those, you know, things are not offered at any school. I don't care how progressive the school is. You don't go to school and then get taught about the history of chairs, for example. You know, the history of tables, the different types of tables that there are, and the history of design. It's something that you look at, I suppose, in the world and go, why is this built in this particular way? Why did we choose this particular sofa? Is that what happened with you?
Not exactly.
Okay.
This is the story what went down. Basically, I did technical drawing and woodwork at school, and those are the subjects where I was like just showing flames, man. You know.
I want to just stop you there because like a lot of people are like, well, you know, when you do those kind of subjects, it means you're one of the special kids. You couldn't quite cut it in the normal academics, but actually, you know, it's something quite important because from there you have created and cut for yourself a niche, and you've created a business. And had you maybe been forced to do, you know, your normal, what we call normal, your standard academics, you might not even found that niche.
Chief, I actually dropped out of varsity.
Yeah.
Because I went and I studied something which...
What did you study at varsity?
Tourism management.
Wow.
And how that happened was, obviously, again, coming from the hood, you go to a multiracial school and you hear these white kids talking about a gap year after matric. And you're sitting there and you're like, that sounds so cool. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah, we've spoken about that on the show. And that's interesting because, you know, we as, I suppose, on Black Life, we have to represent. We don't necessarily as Black people, especially our generation, we didn't get gap years. A gap year was you either getting a job or just not having funds to go to university.
Yeah, that was just it. You know, and I wanted to make a deliberate decision to say I want to take a gap year purely because what I wanted to do after school I couldn't do, and I wanted to go into motor mechanics design. I wanted to go to a BMW academy in Germany.
Mm.
We spoke about it with the old man. Old man said, "I got your back. Let's do this, man." Came results, it wasn't gonna happen.
Oh, so your results were not cutting it.
We're not cutting it, okay. You know. And I had to have a backup plan, and my plan was I don't have one. So can I take a year just to think about what I want to do?
Okay. Yeah.
My mother was like, "No ways."
But the fear of that is always that people at that age, when they say they actually want to gap year, it's actually trying to avoid any sort of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it does happen where maybe you're not even trying to avoid responsibility, but you get used to, maybe you get a nice little job nyana somewhere. Mm. You start earning your 3,500. Mm-hmm. And you know, back in the day, that was a lot of money.
For sure.
You start knowing what it's like to buy your own clothes. You start opening an Edgar's account. Now, gumnandi. And you think life is always going to be like that. And you never go back and you never take studying seriously.
In fact, that's what my mother said.
Yeah.
She said, "Dude, you're going to work and you're not going to want to see a classroom again."
Of course.
So that's not happening. So you pick whatever you think you want to do, and that's the end of that.
And just do something.
I did that. I decided, I think I like traveling. Let me try tourism.
Okay.
Only to realize you don't get to travel. Instead, you admin people who are traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
So midway through the year, I said, I don't want to do this.
Okay.
I said, this is not the life that I want.
Mm.
I made it to say, I kind of, you know, dug deep to say, Chief, what do you want to do with yourself? And I don't know whether you call it a vision or you'd call it a backtrack to my standard 9 class, where we just built up these chess tables and we just varnished them and they're sitting in the sun to dry.
Mm.
You know, T, I can't explain to you the emotion that I went through thinking back to that, because in my mind I said, there is something that I've created with my hands.
Yes.
I'm capable of creating something. And I made that decision to say, that's the feeling I want to have every day of my life.
Yes.
And that's how the decision was made to basically go into this industry. But funny enough, at that point, I told all my classmates, I'm like, guys, I'm dropping out of this thing. They were like, okay, so what you going to do? Mm. I said, I'm going into furniture. Everyone said, oh, you're going to fulfill Ellerin's. And that's because that's how foreign a concept interior design was. By the way, I'm an interior designer, not a decorator.
Sorry. You see, that's the thing, right? And let's debunk that.
Sure.
What is the difference between an interior designer and a decorator?
Let me tell you a funny industry joke. Basically, yes. Architects look down on interior designers look down on decorators.
Okay.
Long story short, architects basically give us the space.
Mm-hmm.
Interior designers plan the space. Okay. You're with me from a structural point of view. So that's where you get interior architecture. And then interior decorators are more focused on the softs. And by softs, you're talking the furniture, you're talking textures, you're talking colors, you're talking curtains, you're talking cushions.
Okay, so help me out here a little bit. As an interior designer, are you talking about the finishes, the skirtings, the type of tiles that should go into that space, the colors, the paint, even the, because nowadays even the color of the roof tiling, right, and the type of roof tiling, is that at that level that you're that we're talking structurally, should this be wood or should it be concrete?
Yes, so there's to a degree a thin line between the input an architect will give and the input an interior designer would give from a structural point of view. You know, so it takes great understanding and appreciating of the other one's capabilities.
So basically you work with the architect from the get-go.
Yes, sir.
This is interesting. Yes, sir. Now this gets exciting.
Here's a quick analogy of how the whole thing would work. Basically, if you were to take a building and turn it upside down,
yes,
everything that falls is care of the interior decorator.
Okay, I see.
So everything that stays, that still gives you the theme, still gives you the feel, the style, and that's the interior designer.
Okay.
In reference to your floor finishes, wall finishes, ceilings, that kind of thing.
Okay. So take us through your journey, because I want to come back to this. I mean, if people could just, this is not a visual medium, but if they could just see some of the things that I'm seeing in terms of the buildings that you've put together, the homes that you've put together. You've been on top billing a couple of times. You've been in some of the biggest interior decoration and home magazines in South Africa. You've been on various TV channels, international and local as well, for the work that you do, which is rare because, you know, I was on top billing for a long time and we didn't see a lot of guys that looked like you, in the sense that we didn't see a lot of, let me put it squarely, we didn't see a lot of dakis, you know, from Kokasi, who are now putting together these wonderful spaces, whether they're homes, hotels, office spaces, shops, businesses, and so on and so forth. Let's go back, because this is important. Yeah. We want to start at the beginning.
Sure.
You're now remembering your woodwork, your table that you created.
Yeah.
You've just dropped out of tourism.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Basically, what happens next is that I literally just start doing a bit of due diligence. And that due diligence was, for one, the idea in my head was I wanted to manufacture furniture. Okay?
Okay.
So I was fortunate to meet a gentleman who I could say to a degree was my first mentor. I was like 17 years old at the time.
Okay.
So I spoke to this man only to find that at the time he used to work for Backus Brothers, and I happened to mention that I'm into furniture. So he had a great interest to say, what do you do? I said, look, I manufacture, I do like the cabinets in Yana Kuka, see, you know, that kind of thing and whatnot. So he looked at me and the type of person I am and how well packaged I am. He said to me, you shouldn't be manufacturing. So it was a bit of a shocker and a bit of a poke to my dream. I'm saying, but why? He says, you look like a guy that should be selling furniture.
Okay.
So that was a new concept for me. I'm thinking, hang ten. If my mind is geared towards manufacturing, what's in it when it comes to selling? What's so special about the selling of furniture? And that's how the whole world opened up basically to me, where the concept was sold to me of how you sell furniture. But that was the layman's description of what an interior designer is.
Yes.
Do you know
yes,
what I'm saying? Yes, somebody yes. who sells you furniture.
Okay.
But in essence, it is an individual who is able to visualize a space and spec what needs to go into that space in order to create the end picture that is required. And that depends on a number of elements.
But it sounds to me like you're the kind of person who always knew what you were going to be doing. It's almost like a calling that you have, right? It's not something that you just fell into because, well, you're just good at making tables and you dress nice. How important is that in your success, that this is more of a calling than just something that you fell into?
It's everything. It's everything, in the sense that, for one, I got a number of the elements of my being permeate through my work. For one, I'm a communicator before anything else. So I'm a person who tells stories, you know. Secondly, I'm a salesman among salesmen.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? I'm that guy you don't want to bring into your house because I'll sell your whole house for the furniture.
Okay.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And then over and
so
above
don't
that,
I'm a,
you know, over and above that, over and above that, I'm a designer. Okay. Now, when you take all of those elements, I basically infuse them into my work, where for one, I tell stories with my interiors. Mm. I don't just design for the sake of, we need a couch here, let's poke a couch here. You know what I'm saying? I tell a story from the minute you experience the house.
I just want to understand something, because clearly someone like you sees the world in a different way to someone like me. You see pictures in everything. You see spaces. You know, whereas I walk into a room and I just see four walls. You, like you said, you see a space that you can tell a story in. Mm-hmm. What is it that you can say that you know that you see that other people just cannot see?
One of the things that I do, Dimisho, when you tell stories, number one, you need an imagination.
Okay.
You need to be able to draw pictures in your head. And part of my way of drawing pictures, or let me say the foundation of how I draw my pictures or tell my stories, is firstly with the person that's going to be in that space.
Okay.
Meaning, well, our philosophy is, when we design, is what we... Our understanding is that your space is an extension of your personality.
Of course.
When somebody walks into your space, they shouldn't say, Buzo was here. Mm. When they walk into your space, they should say, wow, Tumisho, like, this is so you, dog.
Yeah.
Like, I can just see you throwing your feet up here.
Okay.
I can just see you lounging on the couch, you know, just browsing through chat. Yeah. Like, this is you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, more than anything, my signature is not the important thing in the space.
Mm.
It's actually having the person's identity and the person's personality permeating throughout that space.
But I suppose what I mean by that is obviously you see textures, you see colors, you see fabrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
A simple thing is, you know, I remember dabbling in this design thing, because, you know, in drama you do a bit of design, because for stage you have to build a story that way, so the character where they live, right? What kind of space were they living? And I see a shirt. This shirt, for example, is a blue shirt. You might go a little bit further and say, well, the texture of that shirt, there's different types of textures, there's even different materials for that blue, like there's the tweeds and you know the kind of golf shirt you're wearing. It's not just a golf shirt, right? It's the material is you know, I'm not even gonna try. I'm trying to let you take over from here.
No, you're very right in that. What I think you're in essence saying is, I'm able. It's like when you put together a picture.
Yeah.
A picture is made up of small little pixels.
And
it's all those millions of pixels together,
right,
that give you that picture.
In everything, even the cell phone cover. You are not just seeing plastic. Okay, it's you're even able to say the color specifically.
Yes.
You're not just, it's an orangey.
Yeah.
It's bluish.
100%, you know. Look, every small element and small detail makes up the overall story. Do you know what I'm saying? So, yes, you are right. My mind is wired in a way that is able to put all of those elements together. Do you know what I'm saying? And find even meaning behind all of those elements.
But how did you learn? For example, I mean, okay, you can literally go and sit down with a dictionary and learn all the different colors, right? You can go and find a book on materials and learn all the different materials and textiles. For example, the different weaves and so on and so forth, the different kind of leathers. But what was your journey of learning that?
You know, with the background that I had, for example, from a technical drawing background, I understood perspectives.
Okay.
I understood how to draw, how to correlate views, that kind of thing. With my woodwork background, I had great insight, or I was well versed in understanding the characteristics around carpentry. Okay, so over and above that, I added elements of decor through some of the jobs that I had along the way.
Okay.
I mean, I started with the Backus brothers, for example. All five brothers, you know, I can't even front. They taught me everything I know.
Awesome. So you had like a hands-on experience. You had the varsity of being with the people who are leaders in this, you know, I suppose you could say worldwide, but definitely in this country.
Well, definitely.
You were sitting with these guys on a day-to-day basis, and they were putting it into your head that this particular couch, right, might be white and cotton, but this is, it's not the same. This cushion that is not the same as that cushion, and it's called this, because you have to know that. You have to have your own jargon.
For sure.
I mean, you can't just come in and just start saying, no, we're gonna put a cushion that is sort of like furry, that's got like it's brownish,
the fringe nyana
with I'm a frilnyana. It's gonna be like, okay, guy, you don't know the language. You have to know the lingo. How important is it to know the lingo? Because in every industry, the lingo is important to be seen as an expert.
Look, one thing about design, Dimisho, is that design is communication. And it you know, I often say the difference between art and design is the fact that art is expression. So art, when you see a piece of art, it's merely an expression of what the artist was going through or experiencing at that particular space and time.
Okay.
So it's open for interpretation.
All right.
Okay. But when you design, design is communication, design is instruction. Because design is actually a response to need. That's what design is. When people need shoes, someone goes and designs shoes.
I see what you mean.
When people need shelter, someone goes and designs shelter.
In fact, it's like a blueprint, right? Design is a blueprint because everything needs to be designed before it's manufactured.
Exactly.
Or it's made.
Exactly.
And with what you do, what you're saying is you design a space so that when someone walks into my space, mm-hmm. they already see me.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, I mean, I've seen a lot of your spaces that you've designed. I can't see myself lounging in some of those spaces. Some of them look so like so well put together and so neat. It's like, dude, get your foot off the couch. Like you can't even relax. You're sitting there as if you are ready to, you know, to go into a presentation.
Look,
are they comfortable?
Very, very. Okay. I mean, I've had the privilege of doing some amazing projects, and by amazing projects, what I mean is that they were not always the same kind of projects. Where, for example, it was all new money,
okay,
because it was all black clients.
Nice. You know?
So it wasn't all that. I had opportunity to do work for an Afrikaans couple that saw me on Top Billing one time, called me up and said, "Come up to Witbank and do a house."
Mm.
You know, I mean, that journey on its own was a huge revelation, or was an education for me in terms of how deep can I dig. Do you know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing then.
Yeah.
How different are we?
Wow.
Like,
wow.
You know, when you do a black person's house, new money, and Afrikaans people in Witbank.
Let me break it to you down this way.
Please.
You get black people from the hood, you get black people from the north. Two different kettle of fish.
Even though they might both be from the hood.
Exactly.
Okay.
But two like different kettle of fish purely because of the value system.
All right.
There are certain things that when you from the north, for example, the culture is different in terms of how we dance, the music we listen to, what we deem as sophisticated,
yes,
as classy.
Yes.
Go to the hood. There's different definitions of those very same things.
Uh-huh.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, on the same breath, you got white people from the East End, you got white people from the South, you got white people from the North.
Yeah.
Three different kettle of fish.
Mm.
In the East, it all depends what size 4x4 you've got.
Okay.
In the South, it depends what size tattoo you got coming up your neck.
Yeah.
What size gold chain around your neck.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Are you driving an E36 BMW?
Yeah.
Is it yellow?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, in the
are you
North,
driving an M3 or a C63 AMG?
You,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
And a funny thing, right? We're going to just keep that, hang on to that thought, but... Like, sometimes white people in the South scare me because they're too damn gangster.
Chief.
Like, this guy is in his late 30s, mid 40s, listening to gangster hip hop, driving a blacked out E63 with tinted windows, wearing baggy jeans, looking like they're going to shoot you in the face.
I think First Earth released Straight Outta Compton or Sold Out at the Glen.
Mostly white people watching that, right? They were like, yeah, that's our music. We can relate, dog. I used to hang out with Nick Durant a lot. And him his people.
He's a typical Southie.
Yeah.
He's a typical Southern boy.
Okay.
You know?
So when you decorate for those guys, they want the bling furniture.
Of course. You know, it's all about show. It's all about people gotta know.
But don't you find that the black people and the white people in the South are the same? Just as the black people and the white people in the North are kind of similar in their tastes.
Not exactly, to a degree.
To a degree. Okay. So you're going to explain now the North.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So now the North. Now, when they take you seriously, first thing they got to notice is a Mont Blanc on your pocket.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Right. They need to hear how well-traveled you are. Mm. They need to understand what publications you read. Mm. They need to understand what TV shows you're reading. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
They
don't scream out money. They got other ways of letting their money speak.
If anything, actually... You might find that that particular couch that you sit on in someone's house in the North doesn't look particularly like wow.
Yes.
But it's hell of an expensive
exactly.
in comparison, right?
See, the trick is the North is a lot more conservative.
Is it that old money sort of British, European sort of, I got money, but you never know how much money I have. Whereas I suppose the South and the East is more American you know my money because you're sitting on it.
Well, when I started doing houses for white people in the north, I was acquainted with a term called the WASP.
Yes.
Which is the White Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Yes, that's right.
You know, that's like proper old money.
That's where I grew up.
You know what I'm saying? So don't come here with those nasty things. You need to have a bit of class. Yes. You need to have a bit of heritage. You need to have a little bit of legacy. You know?
Yeah, so they understand things like the old British cabinet makers. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to bring a side table, you're talking a particular style of side table. When you're talking a chair, you must say, I'm going to put an Eames chair in this corner and a Barcelona chair in that one. Something like that,
The biggest thing for them is history. Mm. There has to be history. There has to be culture.
Okay. But you got to satisfy all your clients.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
And you can't look down on anyone's particular style. You just got to satisfy their style. Like you said,
of course.
You've got to make sure that when someone walks into that home or that business, it says the story.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said something very interesting just now. One of the other things I do with my work is that I educate.
All right.
I educate and I inspire.
Okay.
And how do I do that? Is because I also have an understanding that my clients don't know what I know.
That's true.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They don't understand what influences what I do. So before I can even start talking ideas, I first go through a process of education. And that process is, number one, understanding how much they know. How exposed are they into the various different styles that are out there? You know?
Okay.
When I've established that, I know then where do I need to start work from.
That's true, because like, you know, we're not in your industry.
Mm-hmm.
I know furniture from what I see on TV.
That's right.
Or what I can call decor. And I don't want to like minimize it by just saying furniture. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I know what I've seen that I like. Either I've seen it on a TV show, in a movie, or I've seen it in a magazine, or at a furniture shop. I don't even know what it's called half the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say to you, no, man, it's a couch like this.
Yes,
you know, it's that sort of modernish, sort of old school. It's putting together. And then you must kind of go, what the hell are you talking about?
No, you know, funny enough, I had an interesting radio interview last week. We're on the show. What they basically were trying to unpack or trying to open up is finding out why is it that black people's houses all look the same? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
to a that's
degree,
fair enough.
Yeah, to a degree, that goes to saying what influences their decisions and their style. And you know what I'm saying?
I mean, what is that style of furniture that everyone's parents had in the main lounge when you've made it? Like if your parents have made it, in the main lounge, you would have it. And it was that old Italian type styled furniture.
It's called ornate. It's very carved. It's got
it's
a lot of carving.
Right?
Either you've got a ball and claw, or you've got a lion's
foot.
Yeah, my
parents had it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone else's parents had it.
And here's the interesting thing: that style of furniture, if you actually look at its history, or rather, you look at its value, it's more towards history than anything. So what would happen is that because obviously as Dakis back then, we didn't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have the north kind of money or the now kind of money.
So
it was one way of saying this is who we are in this house.
You
know what I'm saying? We got that kind of money.
Okay.
Do you follow what I'm saying? So that's what influenced why you had to go buy that. If you said, I got a bit of money and I want to make my house look beautiful and I'm sophisticated and I got a bit of culture and a bit of history, then you'd go get that. So you'd find back in the day it would be your Ginn and Richards.
Yes.
Who are the ones who had that kind of furniture. You know, your Tony Factors.
But there's a shop specifically in Pretoria that still sells that and they're still doing very well. And it's expensive. It's
K&K Showroom.
I think so. It's above your Ginn and Richards and all those people. It's
K&K.
Like, and you're like,
It's quite gory.
Yeah, it's quite gory. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you buy there in Pretoria, you're like somebody.
You know, see, now that goes to branding.
Mm.
That goes to branding because now branding is also about not what you say you are, but what they say you are.
I guess the same story with the Bacos brothers, right? There was a time when, as black people, if you could say that, you know, I bought this dining room set of Bacos.
I'll tell you a very
That was the whole dining, that was the dinner experience.
I'll tell you a very funny story. I had a client who his whole house was furnished from Bacos. He did not want the price tags taken off. I'm telling you now, this guy was on some chief. Watch how you sit on that couch. I think it's from Bacos, eh? I'm serious with you.
Look, I don't blame him. Because every time I've walked into that store, right? You know, since I can remember, since my late 20s, it was like my dream, you know. And you go in there till today, you're like, a couch costs so much, you may as well keep the price tag on it. Because how will they know otherwise? It looks like any other couch, you know. But I need to let you know that, dude, this is a 100,000 rand couch. It's not just a couch.
I'll tell you two funny incidences, in essence, with regards to myself and Pacos. How I got hired was basically of how I was packaged.
Yes.
They'd never seen my CV. They've never seen an application form, nothing. Literally, what happened was, it was my dream to be a Pacos competitor.
Mm.
Remember, I wanted to go into furniture
manufacturing. Okay. At 17, you were trying to compete. First of all, at 17, you knew about Pacos Brothers.
Look,
where are you from?
I'm from Vosloo, it's in the Eastern.
From Vosloo, you knew about at 17.
Yeah, man.
How did you know about Pacos when?
Look, the thing is, I was that guy who, whenever I got into anything, I always wanted to know who's the best at it.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I see.
Because then I could always model myself after that.
So you educated yourself.
I educated myself.
All right.
So in so doing, one day I decided I'm getting in a cab. I want to go see this Pacos Brothers because
you've heard about.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I keep hearing about it. I'm like, I'm going. You know. So I went. And my first experience, Dimitri, like literally I walked in, I was blown away.
You're talking about the one in Dunkeld?
Yes.
Because that was a store back then.
Chief, I was blown away. When I say blown away, like I felt tears coming down my cheeks, bro.
You were like...
Because I'm sitting there and I'm like, how in the world am I going to compete with this?
This was nirvana for you.
Dude, like, wow, you know? And it was topped off when an old man walked past and in my mind I thought that's one of the brothers. So I pounced on him.
Mm.
I was like, yo, how are you? Like, cool, hey, what's up? Struck conversation. He's like, what do you want? I'm like, are you one of the brothers? He's like, why are you asking? I'm like, I just want to meet the role models, man. Man looked at me, looked up and down and said, would you like to sell furniture? Do me sure. I almost wet my pants, man.
Wow.
That's like you being
a great story.
That's though. Like you being a township kid wanting to play soccer, meeting Keza Mtaung, saying you want to play for Keza Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah. It's like walking into, I don't know, any studio in high school and saying, I've always wanted to be on the show. And they're like, sure, you know.
Here's a mic. Come in tomorrow and the next day and the next day.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I was like, oh, wow, are you serious? He's like, yeah. I was like, when can I start? He says, can you start now? I was like, no ways. I need to go home, man. I need to go home, tell my mother. I need to go home, tell everybody. That
yeah.
I got a job at Beckles, man.
This is a big deal. This is not Gene and Richards. You know,
I mean, do
it's not coma.
Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I went from literally seeing, you know, it was Notorious B.I.G.'s birthday, I think, yesterday.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I literally yesterday, I remember saying it was all a dream. I used to read Homeowner magazine.
Yeah.
Guess what? I've been featured on Homeowner. Do you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's what it was. Do you know what I'm saying? Just a complete dream. Almost to a degree, you sit there and you're like, really?
This is me.
Really, really?
And how were your first couple of years then? How were your first year? Were you successful?
Rather,
from
let me
the get go.
There were two things with that experience. One was that I learned so much. I sponged everything those guys said to me. You know what I'm saying? But it was also very difficult because, for one, they were very hard. They expected. Do you know what I mean?
But the best mentors are always very hard.
For sure.
Because they have to make you realize that actually your dream now, what you were dreaming about, to live it, is going to take a lot of hard work and perseverance. Because like you said, these are old men.
Yeah.
So they've been doing this for a while.
Look, I tapped into 35 years of experience.
Yeah.
You must understand.
They got to cram it in there in a couple of months or weeks, right?
You know what I mean? But, you know, I have to be honest enough. I call them my godfathers. You know, when I talk to them, I say Uncle Bernard, Uncle Norman.
Yeah,
that's how they embraced me. Do you know what I'm saying? And I mean, yes, I was killing it. Dimitri, I was killing it, man. I was there. I was like...
The commissions must have been good.
Never mind the commissions, my man. You know, I'm talking my client list. I used to have premieres from all over Limpopo. Whenever they're in Joburg, they come past the shop just to come have coffee with me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I built such a profile for myself in the industry that when I left, I had a platform to work on. Do you know what I'm saying?
Your own business, right?
Do you know what I mean?
So that therein is the first part of it is, with the beginning of the dream, get something that is a job. Work for somebody. Get mentorship, and then build your connections, right? Your networking. Be on point. what made you so different that you could build those connections that other people, because I know there were other salespeople there, there were other black salespeople there who probably didn't have the same connections you did. What did you do that was so different?
I listen to my mentors, man.
Yeah.
But well, over and above that,
the people listening right now who want to know.
Yeah. Look, I'm a people's person. And when I say I'm a people's person, I'm talking from a sense that I'm interested in people.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the basis of it.
So you're not just trying to sell me something. You're trying to get to know me. You're trying to have a conversation with me.
That's it. I'm trying to understand why do you like that couch? Why?
And you're not trying to sell me the most expensive one. You're trying to sell me the one that's right for me. You might just say, look, I know you can afford this, and it's not about affordability. I'm going to introduce you to this one because this is more you. And then I, as a customer, can go, you know, I like that. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, you're selling me something that over the years, I can look back and say, this guy was right. Because it takes time. You know, you get acquainted, you get to know the furniture in your space, you get to know your space better. And then you go back and you think, this guy was right. And he didn't even just try and rip me off.
Dumisha, it's about value. That's what I sell. Mm. I sell value. Do you know what I'm saying? So I take ideas and I quantify them to value. Do you know what I'm saying? So that is why then in my interest in you, you build confidence to say, you know what? I can trust this guy.
Yes.
You know, this guy's got my back to a point where whatever proposals I make, you are able to have peace of mind in saying he's not going to go do something that I don't like, or that's not about me, or that won't resonate with me, because that confidence has been built. Do you know what I'm saying? My business philosophy is that you sign with me, you sign for life. Purely because the experience I'm going to give you should be second to none.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that is why I've still got clients from Backhouse days, which is like 12 years ago.
Okay. Let's go back to that story about the couple in Woodbank. What did you do for their house?
Okay, there basically what happened is, okay, they saw, I think it was my insert in Top Billing Home Channel, one of the shows. Anyway, called me up and said, listen, we'd like you to come through.
I remember that insert for Top Billing was for the house in Dane Fern Valley. Massive house.
1,465 squares under roof, chief.
That house just looked amazing. I wanted to be adopted by their family.
You know, and for me, that house, I think, was a benchmark. And by benchmark, I'm talking from a sense of, it to a degree showed me what I'm capable of.
Okay.
You know, it's one thing to decorate a 400 square meter house. Mm. You know, it's just got three bedrooms, it's got two lounges, dining, that's it. You know, now I had this huge canvas. Mm. The house had like six lounges, six bedrooms, all en suite, indoor pool, cinema,
indoor gym. I mean, it had a bar that was the size of most people's living rooms.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, it showed me really what I was capable of in reference to, really, there's no size project I couldn't take on. Do you know what I'm saying? So with this couple in Witbank, okay, cool. Call me up. I go out there for a site brief. Number one, hey man, the culture is so different out there.
It is. I drove there last weekend and it's like, wow.
You know, and this is like on a proper farm. Like, I had to drive through crops, bruh, to get to the house.
All right.
You know?
So you were doing a farmhouse.
I was doing a farmhouse. Now, I get there, I realize that the gentleman or the homeowner was someone who was actually quite sophisticated and quite well-traveled, you know? They've stayed at the one and only in Cape Town. They've been to Europe a couple of times. So his taste is not really your typical...
He's not a boer. He's a farmer.
Exactly.
Okay, so what do you farm? Just out of interest.
He had beans, he had millies, he had sheep,
This guy's a millionaire from just beans and sheep.
Maybe
I should get into farming.
It's through that exercise that I actually realize how big an industry and how lucrative farming actually is.
Yeah.
And I realized the whole fuss about the whole bring back the land and everything and what it is.
We
to say
the land.
Actually,
because, hey, guys, you know, money. Who needs a mine when you got a farm?
Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So now the first things first, I had to pull out of my reference point. And my reference point was I had a whole string of black clients. And to a degree, the black clients kind of like the same things.
We all just
got the money now.
Yeah.
So everybody wants crystals. Everybody wants modern. Hey, everybody wants chrome.
Can't
everybody,
blame us. Do you know what because I'm, like, we got the money now. We haven't even had a chance to travel yet.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I've got this Afrikaans family that I have to do at home. Now, their value system is obviously different from my people's.
Mm.
So, you know, what I appreciated was the fact that they allowed me to be me. They said, listen, we called you because we liked what we saw.
Mm.
So please do not put yourself in a box. You know, do not create red tape for yourself, unnecessary red tape for yourself. So
that's very cool, man.
Just do your thing. So I did my due diligence, sat down with them, had them fill up a lifestyle questionnaire, you know, got into their hair, got to understand the kids, everything. And I mean, it first started off as, listen, we'd like to refurbish our main bedroom. Can you come? Buzwe being Buzwe, ended up doing the whole house.
You sold them everything.
I sold them everything, right?
That's cool, though. And how did you... Like, what kind of style, if you can, like, describe it, even to the people who might not understand from your technical terms, what kind of style did they go for?
They liked modern, but they wanted it warm. They didn't want it clinical, you know? Yes. They didn't want the chrome and the glass, and, you know? So they wanted something warm, something rich. So what I did is I went more contemporary. So contemporary is basically your middle way between classical and modern.
Nice.
So there's it's a fusion of elements basically between the two types of
stuff. Okay, and you fill that in a farmhouse. What kind of style of architecture was the farmhouse?
It was actually quite a modern house, actually.
Okay.
By modern, I mean it had, you know, clean lines, open
plan. Was it like modern South African, what we call like barnyard style, or modern?
No, it was more vernacular architecture, actually, you know.
Okay.
What do you call that? Exactly. I'm going to jargon, but for the sake of the listeners, look, it was not a classical house. It was not a modern house.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it, well, in style wise, is what we kind of see at Waterfall Estate, if you're in Joburg, that sort of thing, where it's like modern, but it's not your Tuscan type houses, but South African. It's more based in the land.
Yeah, look, to a degree, some of these, what you must understand is that as a country, as South Africa, we are a young country.
Mm.
And when I say young country, I'm talking in terms of our heritage.
Yeah. You
understand what
I'm
saying?
No, you're right.
To a degree, we're a colony of, what do you call it, the Netherlands, you know?
Yeah.
And
then we're the colony of the British.
Uh-huh. So to a degree, in finding our identity, you know, you couldn't compare to an Ireland or a Britain that dates back so many thousand years in terms of having an actual identity. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're kind of fresh. So we're still establishing. I mean, when you look at heritage architecture, for example, in South Africa, you're talking your Herbert Bakers, you know, which were people who were designing in the early 1900s.
Yeah, you designed the Union Buildings.
The Union Buildings.
If you ever went to Boys High, you designed Boys High. If you went to TSG.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So that sort of thing.
You find, to a degree, that becomes our early reference point, unless you take it back to the Cape Dutch style architecture.
Yes,
do you get what I'm saying?
Yes,
so to a degree, we really don't have a kind of template or a kind of structured identity to say this is South African design.
Okay. I want to come back to the contemporary now, where you are.
Uh-huh.
You have created a business that is not only about decor and design, but also it's about investment as well as an institution. Sorry.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Tell me first. Let's start with the investment side. How do you take what you do and make it an investment business? And then I want to know about the institution.
Well, basically, the investment arm of our business is a vehicle that allows us to influence the world of design beyond spaces.
Okay.
So in essence, we've got a number of partners that we're in partnership with. That includes Paragon Interiors, that includes the Itzeltal Group, that includes Hoi Polloi, who are horticulturists, culturists, and then they also do a lot of object art. So we've got partnerships with those guys where we are involved more towards lifestyle beyond just designing spaces. You follow what I'm saying? So in terms of cutlery, in terms of rug designs, in terms of tile design, sanitaryware, that kind of thing.
Okay. So basically, you facilitate the investment. So if I say, Buzwe, I've like got a 2 million bikes burning a hole in my pocket, can you invest it nicely for me, and can I see a return?
No, for sure, but exclusive to the design space.
Yes. Nice.
So most definitely. So I mean, we're in a situation right now where we've basically changed our whole business model.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from being a design company to being in the business of design.
Mm-hmm.
So that's through the three tiers that we've structured our business on, which, as you said, is interiors, institute, and investment.
Okay.
So with the interiors, it's still, you know, our core business in reference to, you know, personalizing spaces or personifying spaces, if I may say. And then you've got design, the name of the company is called Design Dreams International. Okay. So under Design Dreams International, you've got Design Dreams Interiors, Design Dreams Institute, Design Dreams Investment.
Okay.
So with the Design Dreams Institute, it's basically our educational platform, where we basically facilitate things like consultations, expert opinion, articles. I judge design competitions annually. I get invited to speak on various subjects of design. So that encompasses that. But we have a vision within the space of probably 5 to 10 years to open up a design school. So currently we've got a mentorship program that we've put together where basically we invite schools from the township every last Friday of the month to give us 5 of the most creative students. So they get to spend a day in our offices. So they'll spend like a couple of hours with me and then the rest of the day with my staff. And the whole idea behind
that is so cool.
The whole idea besides that was inspired basically by, you know, my introduction into the industry where I said to my classmates, I want to go into furniture, and the first thing they said was elegance. Yeah, so there's a lot of these kids out there who, when they think design, they only think architecture and they only think fashion design. They don't understand that, hey, there's product design, there's interior design, there's lighting design.
Yeah.
There's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so all that we're trying to do is establish a platform that can flick their brains.
Yeah. Because now, I mean, you know, you go to even studios, sound studios, and there's design for those as well, in terms of just how everything, the machinery, the equipment, what kind of equipment must be put in, the colors of the space to create the best creativity, right? And what must be on the walls. I mean, things like that, someone has to design.
No, for sure.
And with our growing television and film industry, art direction, what you do, you could jump right into art directing. I mean, you could art direct the next film that I do.
Set,
you know?
Set design.
Exactly, set design, which is basically, I say, okay, we're doing a movie. It's contemporary. It's about this sort of thing. Now, you must find the spaces and give me the design, you know, because at the moment, I think our industry is still quite young as well. So when you look at the Oscars and you see the person who won the best art director at the Oscars, and that was for Mad Max, that person basically made drawings of what the sets should look like, right? And it's not just anybody who can do that, because they have to create a world. When you look at a television show like Downton Abbey, you know, someone has to say, these people, old money, Britain at the turn of the century, what would the sets look like? When you look at a modern show, like there's a new show called Billions.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're familiar with that, about this guy who's a billionaire, right? Or even one like The Fixer.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Someone has to design what kind of a house is she going to live in, or apartment. Although the White House is already the White House, there are other spaces there.
Yes.
What are the people going to wear that makes them?
Yes.
When you see this, that this person is definitely in politics.
No, it's definitely a case of how to accentuate the story.
Mm.
How to best support the storyline that is being said. So to a degree, with the space, I have to contribute to the story.
Exactly. Because the space tells as much of a story as every other element 100%, of the story.
100%.
Because when we're saying our lines, you know, when I walked onto Scandal recently, my character is supposed to be a property developer, and he's supposed to have a lot of money, and it's a soap opera. They have a good budget, but it's obviously not American type of money. But still, someone had to go and design Hector Tebe's office, as well as Hector Tebe's living space, and work it within four walls to tell a complete story, because we're not seeing the whole house. You know, we're not seeing the entire office. We're just seeing a piece of the office.
That's
a
right.
Piece of the house.
Yeah.
And in that piece,
yeah,
does that say that this guy is perhaps a billionaire?
No, it definitely has to extend Hector's character into that space for you to believe that this Hector character guy really is that billionaire.
What do you think is missing when you watch television shows, South African television shows, and you say, this person's supposed to be so and so, especially when you look at people who are supposed to be moneyed on TV, and that's the life that you live amongst these people in terms of you do their homes. what is it that we're missing when you look at that, or we're getting right even, and you say, you know what, these guys are getting it right because I can see the elements, what they're trying to do, and I can see here where they're getting it wrong, because if they had just done that or done that, obviously it's always budget, like someone has to spend that money, right? So maybe you can help us out on that one.
Look, Dumisha, I think to a degree we're still battling with it's a culture that I think we're still battling with in South Africa, and that's a culture of having champagne taste with an Oros budget. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, we have not, that's always been a problem.
We have not grappled with the idea of putting our money where our passions are, putting our money where, you know, our craft would be. We try and get the most out of the least that we can put in, you know?
Yeah.
So in that sense, we still got a long road to travel. I mean, for example, you walk into our studios, man. I did not spare a cent. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a theater of interiors. You've got a whole experience of interior design when you walk through our offices. Do you know what I'm saying? And you know, I see this through a number of people that walk through our doors. You know, jaws hit the floor. Do you know what I'm saying? Because in their minds, they're saying, are you mad to go and pour out so much money into the space? But what they don't understand is the mere fact that I need to tell stories.
I
need to tell the story with this thing. So when I come into your house and I'm saying I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and whatnot, you need to have close reference to what I'm talking about. Because I cannot come and claim to say I can do 1, 2, 3, 4. Meanwhile, I've got no reference point.
And I mean, like, what you do is high end.
Yeah.
So basically, I although I could come to you and say, listen, man, you know, you're just going to have to go to like Corey Craft and see what you can do at Rochester.
No, and we've done that.
But be that as it may, if you say to me, and I've got the budget, that, look, this single seat, this chair is a 50,000 rand chair. I'm like, it's one chair. You know, I'm going to be judging on, but you didn't do that in your space.
Uh-huh.
So now you're making me spend on it.
Anyway, now you know what I'm saying.
You went to that, you've got a 2,000 rand chair, and you're making me spend on a 50,000 rand chair. But how important is it, like, to spend that kind of money? Like, what is the difference between a chair that would probably cost 50,000 and a chair that would cost maybe 10,000?
That's a great question you just asked there. Now, with furniture, to me, you pay for what you get.
Really?
When a couch is 5,000 rand, there's a reason why it's 5,000 rand.
Okay.
When a couch is 50K, there is a reason why it's 50K.
No. Please, educate me.
Okay.
Because sometimes I can be a little bit cheap. And I can go, no. But really, it's a couch, it's a couch, it's a couch.
All right. There are three elements that factor into any piece of furniture.
Okay.
Okay. Those elements, number one, will include aesthetics.
Yes.
Meaning the look, the look. Design. Is it cutting edge? Is it, you know, fresh now, just off the press?
But, you know.
Hang ten.
Yeah.
Because you can't judge it just on that alone.
I hear you. Okay. And anyone can go look at a picture and remake that, right? Which is what a lot of people will say.
Uh-huh.
No, don't worry.
Yeah.
Go to Buckhorst and see what you like, then come back to me.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Then you get the material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, materials vary. You get materials for 80 rand a square meter, up to materials that can cost up to 12,000 rand a meter.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Now, just to give you an idea, if it's 12,000 rand a meter for a typical two-seater couch, you need roughly about 16 meters. So multiply. There you go.
That's it.
So that's the
What kind of material is this? Fireproof, bombproof? Well,
it all depends. And I say it all depends. For example, you'll get fashion design houses who will go and get into furniture. And
so you might get a Versace.
Uh-huh. Get a Fendi. Go and you get you know what I'm saying? Right. So those are the other elements. But obviously, the brand behind the name tells you that level of quality that you're getting with that material. So it doesn't just go to say the name. It's what you've come to expect. It's the promise that you know to expect from that brand.
But the other thing, I mean, that's important, that what you're talking about now, when it just comes to the material side of it, right? Cotton is cotton. I might think cotton is cotton. This is a cotton covered couch, but this particular one, it might be easier to keep clean. It might be easier to clean, and it also will last me for longer. Am I correct? Where you find, like, with certain, even with leather couches, after like 5 years, the leather is not the same as the leather when I first bought it. Whereas this other one, the leather is the leather is a leather. 10 years down the line.
Look, it all boils down to the quality of the product and the characteristic of the project. E.g., you get what we call rubs with fabrics. And basically, that's there's a rub test that is done. Where some fabrics, in terms of their hard wearing quality, is determined by how many rubs it can take. So you'll find some can take up to 10,000 rubs, some will take up to 65,000 rubs. Oh, so wow, that tells you the range of quality of fabric that you got. So if it's completely El Cheapo, you'll find that around 2,000 rubs, that thing is gone.
In a year's time.
In a year's time. So that's where when you buy, you know you've got great quality. If in 10, 15 years, you know, you're still looking at the item and it's still looking as fresh as the first day you bought it. Then the third element comes now with the manufacturing. Now, let me break down to you,
yes, please,
El Cheapo through to the most expensive. With the El Cheapo, you find that with a couch, it's like a car.
Yeah.
Your value is not in the rims. It's not in the tinted windows. Your value is what's under the hood.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Aha, uh-huh, yes.
So now how it's manufactured and how it's put together.
Mm-hmm.
So you find that all cheapies, they'll use chipboard for the frame. They'll use nails and screws to put it together and a cold glue, and then they'll use rubber straps underneath the seats. For example, with our couches, we use seasoned pine.
Okay.
Okay, for the frame.
So already just... the materials are more expensive.
The material, okay, seasoned pine. It's bolted, glued, and stapled together.
Aha, so the manufacturing process is longer.
Oh, yeah. It's more intense from a reinforcement point of view.
Yes.
Okay.
It's important.
Uh-huh. And then underneath the cushions, we use steel springs together with rubber steps. So it doesn't sag as early as the other one would.
Okay. I
see. Then you find... excuse me. Then you find with your...
the cushions
with your cushions, with your seat cushion and back cushions, we use high density foam that is Dacron wrapped before it even goes into the fabric.
Okay, I know.
So when you understand, compound all of that together, you now are able to say, listen, I went and I spent 50k on this couch
just to make it
15-20 years later, that couch should still be standing.
Yeah, nice. I think I got a great education today about what you do, and I'm really excited about the Institute as well and where you're going with it. And I look forward to working with you on my next film. I'm working on a TV show that I think you'd be perfect for, and decorating, or rather doing the art direction for, because I think it's about time that we got to that standard. I want to do a TV show where when people see the show, né, and they see the standard of the locations that the people, the characters that I say are those people that you live and work with every day, they believe it immediately.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, okay, I see it.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's it from us. Catch us next week again. Thanks so much, Buzo, for being with us in the studio, and all the best, my brother.
Pleasure.
We're out of here.
All right.
Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle on cliffcentral.com.